And welcome back to the second half of The Source here on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Poverty is soaring in the suburbs. According to a new book from the Brookings Institute, the suburban poverty rate in America has climbed by 64% over the past decade, more than twice as fast as the poverty rate in urban areas. Nearly 16.5 million people live in poverty in the suburbs, compared with about 13 million poor people in the inner city. We're going to talk about poverty in the suburbs. Give us a call if you want to join the conversation. The number is 614-8980. Do you live in the suburbs where people are supposed to be living high on the hog, but you're finding out that ends don't meet at the end of the month? 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Go to the comments section on our website at tpr.org. Our guest this half hour, Elizabeth Kneebone. She's the author of Confronting Suburban Poverty in America from the Brookings Institute. Welcome to The Source, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
So is this a big shocker? Were we not supposed to expect that to have poverty in the suburbs?
Well, I think our perception, you know, generally across the country is when we think about poverty, we tend to think about it being an urban challenge or a rural struggle. But what we've seen increasingly in the last decade and even decades preceding that the poor population in suburbs have been growing at a fast pace, in fact, faster than in cities and in many rural communities. So increasingly suburbs are home to these same challenges we've seen cities struggle with for decades. The fact is the rapid increase, as you noted, the poor population in suburbs grew by 64% just between 2000 and 2011. So a lot of places are struggling with these issues and rapidly growing issues at that in recent years.
So let's define our terms. What do you mean by suburbs?
When we talk about suburbs for this research, generally our research focuses on the 100 largest metro areas across the country. So these are metropolitan statistical areas defined by the Census and Office of Management and Budget. When we say suburbs, we're looking at areas outside the primary cities in these regions. So, for instance, in the Austin region, the city of Austin is what we consider urban, and the suburbs would be the remainder of the metropolitan statistical area.
Like Round Rock and those places, Hutto.
That's right.
And that actually scored high as a place that has a lot of suburban poverty.
That's right. In the Austin region, the city itself saw the poor population grow over the decade by about 77%, so quite steep increases in the city itself. But the suburbs saw its poor population grow by 143%, so more than doubling in just over 10 years.
But it's not just the rate of growth, but we are actually seeing the actual numbers of people living in poverty in the suburbs is higher than the number of people living in poverty in the inner cities.
That's right. For our 100 largest metro areas, that's a tipping point that we passed in the 2000s, even before the Great Recession. As I mentioned, since the 80s, the poor population in suburbs has been growing faster than in cities. But each decade, it's picked up pace. And by the first half of the 2000s, we crossed this tipping point where there are now more poor residents living in the suburbs than in the cities of our largest metro areas. And this isn't true for every individual metro area, but 60 out of 100 now have more poor living in their suburbs than in their cities, and almost every major metro area saw their suburban poor population grow in recent years.
So what do we know about the suburban poor?
Well, in many ways, they're very similar to the population living in poverty in cities in terms of the share living below half the poverty line, what we would call deep poverty. Roughly 45% of the poor in both cities and suburbs live below half the poverty line. We also see similar shares in terms of working statistics, people engaged in work, either full-time or part-time.
So that's a working poor.
That's right. That's increasingly the poor population is a working poor population. And part of that is we can look to the recession, but also the kinds of jobs that have been growing faster in recent years are actually lower paid occupations, which even if you're working full time might not be enough to get you above the poverty line.
Okay, we have this idea of this multi-generational poor that may be an inner city. And is that what we're seeing also in the suburbs, or are we seeing people who are, you know, falling off the economic upward mobility? They're sliding down.
It's a mix of both of those things. Either lower income residents moving to suburban communities, perhaps long-term low-income families who've been struggling for a while in these communities, and then you have a number of people who've been hit hard by the last decade, the two downturns we saw in the 2000s, or as I said, these sort of economic structural changes we've seen that showed household incomes falling even before the Great Recession. So those would be residents who may be slipping down the economic ladder.
Stagnant wages, rising costs, medical costs, falling house prices, they may be underwater, all sorts of things. Well, I've got a caller I want to go to real quick. Steve has been is joining us. Steve, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. I'm concerned about how we're defining poverty, whether that's a federal or a state government definition. And then secondly, how do we compare poverty to, say, poverty as defined in 1963 in terms of the real wages, adjusting for inflation and so forth?
All right, Steve, good questions. And so Elizabeth Kneebone from the Brookings Institute, go ahead and help me answer that question.
Sure. So when we're talking, the numbers that I've been citing so far, those are based on the federal poverty definition, so the official federal measure of poverty. In 2010, for a family of four, that was about $22,314. And this is the same measure that we've had in place since the 60s that's been adjusted for inflation over time. The drawback to this measure is that it's a gross income measure, so it doesn't take into account taxes. It doesn't take into account differences in cost of living. So this is the same standard being applied to communities across the country, whether you're in the Bay Area or in Austin or in Indianapolis. You're all looking at the same federal poverty measure. But it does offer us a consistency to be able to measure these changes over time at a local level.
The thing about the way you measure this by looking at these suburban areas and say like in a city like San Antonio, which is really one big metropolitan area, you really don't have these round rocks that surround it. So we may have the same issues of people living on the outskirts of the city, but not necessarily being counted as being in the suburbs.
Well, in this case, the suburban poor, by our definition, would be anyone outside of the municipal boundary, but within the metropolitan statistical area. What it might do, because we are using the federal poverty guideline, and as I said, for a family of four, that's just over $22,000. If anything, it may be a conservative estimate of the number of families who are struggling to get by, particularly as costs have risen over time. And wages have stagnated, this may not be fully reflective of the number of people struggling in communities across these regions.
Right. So the characterizations of a city, they vary from city to city. So we may have the same situation, here in San Antonio as you do up in Austin, but we just don't have people in these nice little neat little towns like Round Rock and Hutto to kind of describe that.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, we talk about suburbs like they're – we often have one idea of suburbs the same way that we might have one idea of what poverty is. And really we're finding that those ideas are outdated, that suburbs are very diverse, and the challenges that they face in addressing these issues can also range from if you're living in unincorporated county. Yeah,
We'll get back to that. I also want to find out what special challenges the poor have in these suburbs. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back on The Source. You can call in. The number is 614-8980. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about poverty. It's growing twice as fast in the suburbs as it is in the cities. Used to be the common thought was you did well, you grew up, your bank account was nice and fat, you moved out to the suburbs. Well, guess what? That's where poverty is today, and it's skyrocketing out there. Talking to Elizabeth Kneebone of the Brookings Institute, just finished a book on this very topic. So, Elizabeth, what are the special problems that people may have if you're now poor and you're living in the suburbs? Why is that more difficult than living in the inner city?
Well, often, I mean, it's not easy to be poor anywhere, clearly. People are going to be struggling to get by and making trade-offs day to day. What can be a unique challenge for the suburban poor is that often suburban communities have not developed the same sorts of networks, safety nets, kind of infrastructure for addressing the challenges related to poverty that cities have tended to build up over decades. So that can mean there may not be the same sorts of emergency supports or safety net programs that could help you connect to a new job or find subsidized childcare to help you keep a job once you found it. There may not be transit as readily available. Often suburbs are less served by transit and they're less able to get to other jobs in the region, which is a challenge because we've seen jobs shift away from downtowns in almost every major metro area. So it becomes a question of how do people connect to the kinds of opportunities that can help them work their way out of poverty? And often suburbs are less equipped and do not have the same sort of resources and capacity that cities have built up.
So it's harder to go to the food bank, harder to go to the unemployment office, all those things that are centrally located. Now it's all-day issue. How am I going to get there and how am I going to get back?
That's right, because the safety net in suburbs often tends to be stretched out over much further distances. It's much patchier in terms of the types of services, so there may not be a food bank in your community, or you might have to travel some distance to be able to access that. So being able to find those resources, know what you might be eligible for, and connect to it can be quite a challenge, and there can be a number of barriers that residents in suburbs face when trying to connect to those resources.
The phone lines are open. You can call and join the conversation about the growing poverty in the suburbs. The number is 614-8980. Let's go to the phones now. Roger wants to join the conversation. Roger, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much. I'd like to ask your expert what her opinion is of when we were having the boom in real estate and the wheeling and dealing of interest rates prior to the economic downturn. There was a lot of development happening in urban areas, San Antonio, Chicago, where they took inner city people, they took their homes away from them to build big condominium projects, and suburban people moved back into the cities, and the city dwellers ended up having to go into suburbia where they would sometimes, whether it was an immigrant group of people living in one house, multiple families. The wheeling and dealing had already happened. They buy the home and then they can't sustain it because of their income level. So how does that factor into your report?
All right, Roger, thank you for that question. Elizabeth, can you answer that?
Sure. And there are a lot of ways that housing intersects with all of these trends. Just overall, where is affordable housing located within a region? And as the caller mentioned, in terms of tight housing markets where there may have been a lot of urban redevelopment, often residents may be looking further out in the region for more affordable options. There have also been, we've seen housing choice vouchers, portable subsidies be used increasingly in suburban communities. So people finding that opportunity to move into a community they may not have been able to afford otherwise. And of course, the housing crisis plays into this as well. In these major metro areas, about three-quarters of both subprime lending and three-quarters of foreclosures we've seen since that easy credit area have taken place in suburban communities. So that's really another layer of challenge that some of these communities are dealing with as their housing prices have bottomed out and may, destabilize communities. They're struggling to address this both for long-term residents and for those who may be moving in to take advantage of housing that now at this point may be more affordable than it was in the past.
And it used to be that we would have the projects in the inner city and the people who were below the poverty level could go and get government subsidized housing at the projects. But then we broke up the projects and we now have Section 8 housing scattered all over the place. Is that something that has contributed to the diaspora of poverty?
We have seen an increase in the share of housing choice vouchers and residents living in suburbs. So about half now of residents in suburban or in subsidized households using vouchers live in suburban communities. And in some cases, that this is a positive thing. This was a purpose of policy was to try and deconcentrate poverty in the city and allow residents to live in more opportunity-rich, mixed-income areas. For some communities, that is how this has worked out. But for many of these residents who often lack the information about where those opportunities are, we've also seen a large number of voucher holders end up in suburbs that are lower income and may be less opportunity-rich in terms of access to jobs and education. So there's clearly more work to be done from a policy perspective to make sure those vouchers are really creating the kinds of opportunities that we'd hoped to see.
Back to the phones. The number is 614-8980. Michael wants to join the conversation. Michael, welcome to The Source.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. The point I wanted to raise was just the total lack of actual social services, especially in this state as compared to other states. I mean, being someone who's on disability myself, you know, I'm on SSDI, yet I'm only getting $16 a month in food stamps. I was told the wait list for disability housing when I became homeless was 2019. And it's just absolute obscenity of what's going on in this state. I mean, more so here than other places in the nation. I just wanted to see what y'all's input on that would be.
And you, and Michael, you live in the suburbs?
Yes, I live just outside of San Antonio.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. Appreciate that. And he brings up a good issue that many of the poverty, people who are living in poverty, they are disabled, have health issues, many are elderly, and they're out in the suburbs, little places to turn to for help.
I think that's very consistent with what we've seen in a lot of communities across the major regions that we've studied is that isolating factor that can happen within suburban communities, particularly if these populations, whether disabled or elderly or temporarily unemployed, are cut off from the kinds of transit connections that could help them to get to services or jobs elsewhere in the region. And then also just the services themselves, that it really can become, as you said before, an all-day affair or a multiple-day affair to try and connect to the resources that may be available. And this is a particular challenge because it's not that poverty in the cities has gone away. That continues to be an issue, and we've continued to see growth in the poor population in cities. It's just now, even though resources are strained and even diminishing, suburbs are increasingly facing similar challenges and may not be equipped to meet the need that's grown so rapidly.
Back to the phones. Jessica wants to give us a comment. Jessica, you're on The Source.
Hello, thank you so much. I was calling on behalf of parents that have children in schools that it's a really good school district, so they're not used to dealing with parents that do not have enough money to be able to provide for those extracurricular activities, for the school t-shirts, help out with the school fundraiser, be able to get your kid in dance or sports, and all those things that other parents, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, when dues come around and you just don't have it, but they see all their peers, same school, being able to participate in these things, and the school systems haven't become accustomed to having poverty-stricken people attending there.
Jessica, that's a good question. That's a good comment. Thank you so much for that. Elizabeth Kneebone from the Brookings Institute, is that something that has popped up?
Yeah, we've seen that schools are often on the front lines of these trends. The free and reduced price lunch population has grown faster in the suburbs than in cities over time, mirroring the larger trends we've seen in the low-income population. And often in these schools that are seeing a rapid rise in their low-income population, there becomes a question and or a strain in terms of the safety net isn't necessarily well developed around there, around these communities. So schools are the ones where families might come first to say we need additional help, or we don't know where to turn if we're having issues with food security or emergency needs. And many schools are trying to find ways to include these sorts of wraparound supports well beyond education related programs to help address these needs, but are often doing this amid resources that have not kept up. It's not like their funding has changed substantially, yet they're now stretching to provide a whole other range of services or trying to catch up and understand what the needs are of the community that they're increasingly serving.
Right, and you said schools are the front line of many of these issues that are confronted in a community, but also this is where everyone comes together. So you're going to have the children of the people who are living in poverty along with the affluent sitting together in the same classroom. So that's where two worlds collide.
That's right. And you know, this is one thing that we've seen in looking at these trends is lower-income students in the suburbs do tend to, on average, attend better performing schools than their counterparts in the city. And that's one of the benefits we've seen. Schools that have more of a mixed income population, there are a lot of benefits that accrue to lower income students in terms of their own academic performance and their ability to be exposed to a different range of students, and it shows in their outcomes. So there's a definite positive upside that can happen in these places, though at the same time understanding the increased strain on resources and having to navigate the sort of changing and diversifying population and all that that brings with it.
In Confronting Suburban Poverty in America, Elizabeth Kneebone on the new reality of metropolitan poverty and the challenges that are facing the folks who live in the suburbs. Thank you so much for joining us, Elizabeth Kneebone from the Brookings Institute.
Thanks again for having me.
And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you so much for tuning us in.
The Source is a production of Texas Public Radio. Paul Flav produces the show. Oversight is provided by TPR Program Director Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor, and production assistance comes from Catherine Dixon. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.